I'm Katie McGrady, and this is Ave Explores. I can confidently say, we did it! Congratulations, we have arrived at Holy Week. The happiest, holiest, and, you know, most serious time of the year. Let's not pretend we're just going to celebrate and have a party for the next few days. There is a serious reflecting that occurs in these days of Holy Week. And here we are, entering into Holy Week. We start with Palm Sunday, the entrance of Jesus into Jerusalem, the best day of the year because you get a prop at church. I mean, come on, a party favorite mass. And I've never mastered the art of the palm cross, but I know how to use it like a sword or to tickle my kids' ears from the other side of the pew. All joking aside, Palm Sunday is this marker for us in the Lenten season. We've done it. We did it. We've made it. Where's the jelly beans? Where's the Easter eggs filled with chocolates? Where's that coffee creamer or that glass of bourbon or that podcast I can play in the car finally? Where's all those things I gave up? But not so fast. Just because Lent is ending, just because we've entered into Holy Week, Holy Thursday, Good Friday, Easter Sunday are within our grasp, now is precisely the time where we can reinvest ourselves even more. This whole season of Ave Explores, as we've dug into Father Agostino's Made for Heaven, this question has kind of been, lurking is not the right word, but it's been at the back of our minds. It's been ever present. Why Lent? Lent isn't just self-help. Lent isn't just a diet. Lent isn't just this catechetical boot camp of Catholicism that makes us the best Catholic that we can be. It forms us into a person that hopefully recognizes the desires of our heart are not for the things of this world. The things of this world are not bad. The things of this world that bring pleasure and joy are not something we should completely eradicate, unless, of course, maybe that is what the Lord is calling you to in some sort of a specific vocation. But rather, the things of this world, when we've removed some of those pleasures, some of those joys, we've sacrificed. We've been more generous to people rather than just generous to ourselves. We've been quiet and listened to the voice of God. All of this has revealed to us, I'm restless in this life, and am made for the next life, and made for, like the title of Father Agostino's book says, heaven. Holy Week snapshots that beautifully. The entrance into Jerusalem, Jesus announcing very clearly, I'm on the way to something significant, greeted like a king. Holy Thursday, the institution of the priesthood and the Eucharist, the gift of Jesus's body, blood, soul, and divinity given to us through the ministry of the priesthood, established as a servant role within the life of the church. Good Friday, the somber day of Jesus's death, the only day in the calendar year where Mass is not said, where the Eucharist is received, but the words of consecration are not spoken, because we do not have to represent the sacrifice of Jesus on the day the sacrifice occurred. And then Holy Saturday, perhaps the saddest day of the year, the day that Mary's boy is in the tomb, the quiet, the hushed waiting, the trembling and the rattling of a stone rolled away, and come Easter Sunday morning, the great victory of Jesus resurrected, found first by Mary Magdalene in the garden. Spoken her name, and speaking her name, Jesus reveals to her exactly who he is, and she sees in that moment that when he sees her, when he identifies her, she recognizes him. There's great power in Holy Week. And so we wanted to wrap up our season of Ave Explores Lent, digging into this Made for Heaven book, by talking to Father Temenestos, an Ave author who has an incredible new book about the Eucharist coming out very soon. We've got a link for it down in the show notes. But one of the best things about talking to a priest about Holy Week is that you get to ask him about his favorite movements and parts of Holy Week. Because he gets to see it maybe from the best view of the house. He gets to walk through these liturgies of Holy Week, the Holy Thursday, the Good Friday, the Holy Saturday, the Easter Vigil, Easter Sunday, where he is welcoming people into the life of the church, where we're celebrating some of the most beautiful movements and rituals and traditions that we have as Catholics that highlight what it is that we believe. Now, just one brief show note. Father Tim and I recorded this episode, and I say this as bluntly and as honestly as I can. I was sick as a dog when we recorded this podcast. I had a double ear infection and bronchitis in my lungs. I was not at my best. Father Tim carried this episode in such incredible ways, and I'm so, so grateful that he was willing to sit on a Zoom call with a sick mess like I was. It's very penitential, which maybe is exactly how it should be going into the final Lenten days and entering into the holiest days of our church year. This is all part of our Ave Explores series on Made for Heaven by Father Agostino Torres. Here's the best part about Made for Heaven. It doesn't have dates on it. It's the entire Lenten season, all the days of Lent, but you can use it year after year after year. So if you've enjoyed this podcast series and you didn't have a copy of Father Agostino's book, we have a link for it down in the show notes. If you use the code AEX24, you'll get an incredible discount that will put that in your cart. We'll give you a discount on everything on the website, AEX24. It'll give you 25% off your entire order at AveMariaPress.com. You can buy his book for next year's Lent. I mean, I realize that's a full year away, but you never know. You might have loved this show and you want to get more copies of the book to give to people. So do that after you've listened. Right now, we'd love it if you'd sit back and enjoy this conversation about Holy Week with Father Tim Anastos. Father Tim, welcome to back to, I guess. We've had you before, back to Ave Explorers.
Katie, so great to be here. Looking forward to talking with you.
You're always a great conversation, and we're always so excited to have you on the show. Tell us where you are. I know you're up north where it might be a little colder than I am right now.
Right. Actually, right now, it's like 60 degrees out.
Oh, wow.
In Chicago in February. It's nuts. Like all of our students are outside right now, like just like in the sun. It's amazing to watch them. They are totally alive right now. So yes, my name is Father Tim Anastos. I am chaplain at the St. John Paul II Newman Center at University of Illinois, Chicago. So I'm working with college kids all the time. Yeah, it's nice to be able to talk to a normal person, Katie. So this is great.
Not a college kid. Confused about their life or the existential crisis of what I'm going to do. Were you in a parish before you went to college ministry?
Yes. So my first 3 years as a priest, I was at Mary Seat of Wisdom, which is a parish in the northern area of Chicago, a place called Park Ridge, and very awesome, kind of like blue collar, between like blue collar and white collar people. Yeah. It's right on the edge of the city. So a lot of Chicago cops and firefighters would go to the parish because they had to live within the city limits, but as far away as possible. So I got to be a police chaplain and hang out with, we had a big youth group. So it was an awesome first assignment.
Yeah.
And then the Cardinal assigned me after 3 years being there to be a chaplain, college chaplain at U of I.
What was the biggest change from cops to students?
Yeah, right. Well, definitely number one thing, maturity. It's probably the biggest thing, biggest change. For me, like it was so good because as a younger priest, in my first assignment, it was harder to be a father. Mm. It was harder to kind of enter into fatherhood when the majority of the parish are older than you. Not saying that I wasn't respected or wasn't loved, but it's kind of hard to like be a father to older people. And so it was really special coming here, being with college kids, where the Lord really revealed a lot of what it really means to be a father on campus with these kids. So it's been really fruitful. And I've identified more and more with our Heavenly Father through mm-hmm. this assignment. So it's been amazing. I love it. I could stay here forever.
Well, put in a good word with the Cardinal. Not that I'm any sway, but I worked in Chicago for a year. I know like three people still up there.
Oh, see, there we go.
I love that idea of learning how to be a spiritual father. Give us some insight into that. I feel like Holy Week is the perfect time for us to actually learn about, I don't want to say the behind the scenes of the priesthood, because I'm sure a lot of the behind the scenes of the priesthood is paperwork and management of things and,
of course,
you know, what shade of black am I going to don today? But like you're entering into people's lives. I mean, even at like, assuming you were ordained young in your late 20s, early 30s. So like you're burying people that could have been your grandparents. You're hearing the confessions of people that could be your father, your mother. You're walking through life with people. What does that feel like? I know that seems like a silly question, but like, what is that like?
So, I mean, the first word that comes to mind is just intimacy. Mm. There's this intimacy that I get to experience. Yeah, experiencing every different stage of life with people, from like baptizing a little baby nugget infant and bringing them into adoption with the Father to last rites and preparing someone for death. And then even after death, burying bearing the body of a beloved son or daughter of God. So in that, I have just like this intimacy between me and the Father has kind of been unlocked, where especially, I find it especially in confessions and the other sacraments as well, but yeah. I've been noticing, especially this semester, I hear confessions for an hour every day for the students, and there's this beautiful intimacy that I get to experience with the Father in confession. Yeah, I'm doing a thing and giving advice and doing the absolution and praying the prayers in confession, but more and more, I'm noticing how the Father is tending to me and tending to my own heart. And the fact that I am in the sacrament, when I'm being a father to others, the Father is being, he is fathering me, and I'm being tended to in my heart. So it's this amazing experience where I get to, everything that I give is from the Father, just as Jesus said.
Yeah.
Like everything that he has, everything that he's giving on earth is from the Father. So in a way, I get to experience like that ache that Jesus has for the Father.
Yeah.
Imperfectly and sinfully, but it really has led to a lot of intimacy.
That's beautiful. It was on this podcast with Father John Burns, like 3 years ago, where we talked about how in the confessional, he would often like take on the penances of the people.
Right.
You know, like give them a penance. Like, yes, I've got to give you penance, but then say, okay, but I'm now going to go pray for all these penitents, all these people who humbly showed up today in sorrow and in sadness, seeking comfort, did not even know necessarily the prayers this Father was going to give for them, which I've thought about. I've thought about it for 3 years because it was so challenging.
That's amazing, because when I was in college, I experienced something very similar where I went to confession to the priest at the Newman Center that I was at, that I was living at. And I was ashamed of what I did. And then bringing it all to the priest responded and he was like, yeah, can you do just an Our Father for me? And I was like, well, Father, did you just hear what I said? Did you hear these things that are really like hurting my heart? I just gave you so much and I was really vulnerable with you. And all I have to do is an Our Father. And then he shared something really special with me. He's like, I want you to be free. And you don't have to prove anything to the Father. Like, you are loved. And yeah, it's good that you pray in Our Father, but I will take on the rest.
Wow.
man, that destroyed me. I was like,
yeah,
that's what it means to be. That's what it means to be a son.
Yeah.
That's what it means to be a daughter. Like, you don't have to prove anything to the Father.
Yeah.
He loves you. He delights in you.
You know, and I'm sitting here as a mom of a 6-year-old who I had this thought the other day, not this thought, like I had the experience just this past weekend. So we're recording this long before Holy Week. I've been sick for like a week, and moms don't get sick days. Like, you just don't, like, you just have to kind of plow through and hope that the Vicks VapoRub works and that you can humidify enough things in the house. But on Sunday, the playroom was a wreck. The house was just completely torn to shreds because we just kind of all been muddling through and there wasn't enough tea in the world to survive. My husband was doing a spring cleaning reset of our backyard. My 3-year-old is also not feeling super great. So she was taking a nap and I was cleaning the playroom. And cleaning the playroom basically meant I was like moving piles of things around. I started coughing, wasn't feeling great. My 6-year-old comes in and she looks at me. She goes, Mom, I'll take care of the rest of this. I was like, no, buddy, like, it's okay. Like, we all made this mess together. And we had, like, the Legos had been played with.
Right.
The forts had been built. And it was her Sunday afternoon. Like, I could be a benevolent mother. I could, like, let my child not just do a bunch of chores. I was going to pick it up. And she put me to bed. Like, my 6-year-old sent me to bed and said, you go lay down for a little bit, Mom. And she cleaned it.
Wow.
And not only was I proud that she knew how to clean a playroom to my standards, but that like she saw in that moment, I just needed to be taken care of. So I feel like that's something that we can all experience in different phases of that. Like, I'm going to take something on for another. We didn't learn that from nowhere. Like, we see that on the cross.
Amen.
We walk in on Holy Thursday, not even expecting that this familiar story is going to hit us a different way. And then it does every single year. You're talking about taking this on as a spiritual father, which is something that we know Jesus Christ does for us. He takes on that burden of sin. Walk us through Holy Week from the perspective of a priest, starting with Palm Sunday. Now, I'm sure on a college campus, it might be a little different, according to like when spring break and stuff is, but did like y'all do the full Triduum services with a bunch of college kids?
We totally do. And I love that. It's amazing because it comes from the students and their desire for the authentic and for the sacred and for like the other that we literally go all out for Holy Week. You know, the Latin chants, we have like 10 servers serving each of the liturgies, just all the incense, all the smells, the bells, everything, because like they're craving the authentic, they're craving something that is other. Because they don't get that anywhere else. And so we've tried here at the Newman Center to make the chapel and just to make this whole space good and true and beautiful, and specifically emphasizing the beautiful so that they can, encounter the beautiful. Because on campus here at UIC, the architecture of the whole campus is called Brutalist architecture.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So the 70s?
Yeah. Yeah, the 70s. Exactly. So it all looks brutal. And they're walking around in the midst of almost like this kind of communist feel, like you are just good for what you produce.
Oh, wow.
Almost like that's what they're saying to the students, or that's what the architecture is saying. So we're trying to make it beautiful. So yeah, I love it because I get to go all out with the students.
Yeah.
So yeah, we begin with Palm Sunday. The church is always packed for that because students love to get things, you know.
It's like Ash Wednesday. Things,
so. Right, exactly, same thing.
Dirt and palms will show up.
Right, right. And through Holy Week, or through like Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we usually have just one event every day that is kind of centering our hearts towards the Lord. I think the one on Monday that we planned is, we call it bear handing. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Oh, yeah. That's an old school term. Oh, I love that.
Totally.
Yeah.
So we go out on campus and just like ask people, hey, can we pray for you? And we've taught a lot of the students, especially the student leaders, how to be comfortable with that, how to be normal and just strike up a conversation and then pray for someone. And so we're going to be doing that, kind of going out of ourselves. And then we'll have other activities throughout the week. And then Holy Thursday, me and all the guys will prepare to serve the Mass and process Jesus through the Newman Center to bring him to the altar of repose. And all of this is, I experience a lot of intimacy because I get to share the things that I absolutely love most about Jesus and about his church. And like Holy Week is the time that I get to just, guys, I am in love with this person, and let me share with you why I'm in love with this person, especially with Holy Thursday, the Eucharist, the priesthood. Good Friday is always so like solemn and beautiful, and the students experience that like solemnity as well. At the beginning of Good Friday service, you've probably noticed like the priest will lay prostrate on the ground right at the beginning. That's always really powerful for the students. Being able to venerate Jesus, venerate the crucifix, kissing his feet, kissing the cross. It's very, very powerful, very special. Not often that young people get to like really venerate and reverence and respect something. And then Easter Vigil is awesome. We have a few people coming into the church, and one person who is kind of in the church, but has been away for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And so what they're going to do is they're going to make their profession of faith, remake it at the Easter Vigil. I don't know if that's actually like,
I've never heard of allowed. That. Yeah.
I hope I'm not like spouting heresy right now and like the liturgical police is going to get out to get me. Or come out.
They don't listen to this show. Don't worry.
but like he has been far away for a while.
He wants to come home.
He's rediscovered the faith. So I was like, dude, why don't you re-profess your faith at the Easter Vigil? And then he'll receive communion for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, that's really beautiful. I think we all renew our baptismal promises, but if you were at Mass the week before, you kind of already did that. So it's like, if you haven't come in a long time, especially if you haven't received Jesus in a very long time, like to walk through that process again, I think that's the perfect time. I'm all for it. My sister's a canon lawyer, and my next phone call with her at the convent, I will double check.
Yeah, double check. And if anything is against
I'll alert you.
Church teaching, alert me, because I don't want to be excommunicated.
No.
I don't.
I mean, I can't imagine welcoming anyone home to the church. Yeah, but I love that, especially on a college campus where like classes are not off. Like, they still have to go to school. Right. Like, they're still living their normal lives, as are the rest of us. When I was a Catholic school teacher, I was like, of course I get off for Good Friday. And it, obviously, I still work for the church. But my husband, he was like, yeah, in Southwest Louisiana, you get off for Good Friday. That wasn't a thing in Northeastern Pennsylvania. Right. Like, they didn't get off on those days. So it's like the world isn't liturgically oriented, but we can orient ourselves. Do you have a favorite thing within those? Well, it is really just one big liturgy. But do you have a favorite like moment or like tradition that we have or specific liturgical thing that unfolds?
Right. My favorite thing definitely is at the end of the Holy Thursday Mass, when I get to take Jesus and process him with all the army of servers to our quiet study room where we make this beautiful Garden of Gethsemane altar of repose. And it's just really powerful for all of us to kind of process with Jesus to the garden. And I get to be the donkey, you know, carrying Jesus all the way to the altar of repose. And then we do a seven altar pilgrimage. One of the great things about being here in Chicago is that there's a lot of old, amazingly beautiful churches. And they're all like in walking distance. So our focus missionaries, they lead the pilgrimage and we go around to seven churches and just visit Jesus in the middle of the night. And then we all go out to this like 24/7 diner.
Of course.
And stuff our faces before the Good Friday fast. So.
I mean, college students kind of have to. I think it's appropriate. Now, Father Agostino in his book, he talks about how like Holy Week is really this, Jesus turns his face to Jerusalem. Like he sets his mind on this idea of, okay, like this is it. And I sometimes wonder, you know, like we can have this resolve as people who work for the church, as a priest of the church, like this is what it's all about. But some people listen to this show. We've talked to a few of them this season who were trying to bring people home to the faith or introduce people. And Holy Week's like a very intense introduction to that.
Right.
Lent, however, is very much like the everybody's kind of curious by that. So as somebody who's working with college students, you probably have a lot of people who are coming to you with their questions about the church or who are like, well, I want to know what this whole Jesus thing, this whole Catholic thing is all about, but I don't exactly know how to approach it in an approachable way. What would your word of encouragement be to people who have maybe been walking along that path with someone this Lent and as they're coming to Holy Week, maybe they feel intimidated or they're the one who's feeling intimidated. And they're like, okay, I did that Lent thing on Hallow. I read this book because it had free videos, but like, I'm not going to go to the Triduum. This Holy Week thing, like that was a really long gospel on Palm Sunday. Like maybe these Catholics don't know what they're actually doing. What would your word of encouragement be to not just stick with it, but to like recognize like this is really kind of what it's all about. Like everything in our year is building up to these 7 days that are unfolding in front of us.
Right. Yeah. I think, well, first of all, there needs to be at least some kind of openness. And if the openness is not there, then nothing that we can say or even, you know, nothing will work. But if there is an openness, first and foremost, especially with college kids and anyone, we desire to be seen and known, and we desire like authentic friendship, especially in our culture now where it's hard to make friends.
Yeah.
Like even with social media and Facebook and everything, for some reason, it's harder to make friends now.
Yeah.
And so when someone is walking with someone who is, you know, interested in the faith, one of the greatest things is to develop that authentic friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And then the person will begin to really, if they love you, they will begin to love what you love. And as they love what you love, of course, your faith and Jesus, it's automatically going to be like, it's almost like radiation, you know, they may not feel it, but they're being affected at like this atomic level, knowing that they love what you love. And so even if like the liturgy is boring, my encouragement is still invite them in, invite them to what you love. And then afterwards to be able to share why that was awesome to you. Because a lot of the boringness comes from, I feel like I'm outside of this, or I feel like I'm an outsider. I just don't know. So that leads to feeling ostracized. So yeah, give them permission to love what you love and to share that. That's very powerful.
I think so. You write about this a bit in your new book, about this sharing with people what you love. And as Catholics, I think we love most of all the Eucharist. You are a Eucharistic preacher, one of our appointed voices in this Eucharistic revival. I don't know if we said this on the recording. You came down to our diocese, my little town of Lake Charles, Louisiana, the parish where I used to work and grew up in and where my mom and dad still go. You made gumbo with my dad to preach.
Everyone is so friendly. Oh my gosh.
It's the South, man.
I know.
Yeah, it's insane. Three or four different people stopped me at the pickup for the girls today. And they were like, how are you feeling? And I was like, I'm fine. Like, I'm fine. I shouldn't have told anybody. So yeah, that's the South. Everybody's super friendly. But Father, your new book on the Eucharist and your preaching when you were here on the Eucharist has really touched a lot of lives. Tell us a little bit about that new book from Ave that is, I think, really kind of the perfect companion to this Eucharistic revival.
Yeah, it definitely began now a year and a half ago with the leadership team here at the Newman Center, the students who are really bought into the mission and to really desiring to be disciples. They were just noticing whenever they would go to class and when they were walking around campus that they saw so many zombies walking around.
Yeah.
So many people who just were half alive, half dead. And then that they found with Jesus, like how to be fully alive.
Mm.
That through the Eucharist, especially through, we have adoration every day, that through adoration, through receiving the Eucharist at Mass, they came to the conclusion that this is what's actually making us fully alive. Mm-hmm. It's Jesus. Mm-hmm. He's not destroying us. He's not making us into Jesus freaks. Mm-hmm. He's making us more of who we are. And man, that just especially coming from them, it unlocked this part of my heart where I was like, this is exactly what young people and all of us need, is to realize that the closer and closer we get to Jesus, we're not going to be destroyed. Like the demoniac in the gospel, like who says, Jesus, have you come here to destroy us? Yeah. Like the closer we get to Jesus, we're not just destroyed. We become fully alive. So the book is being able to set our hearts and open up our hearts and give our hearts permission to receive the Lord through very simple prayer and making holy hours and just really understanding what it means to be in the presence of the Eucharist.
Yeah. I have a copy of it that I can't wait to dive into, especially with my kids, with my little kids too. I think they could really benefit from this. Father, you also talk to kids sometimes on Spirit Juice Kids. Tell us about your projects with Spirit Juice Studios and where folks can follow you.
Yeah, you can follow on Instagram or TikTok or YouTube. You follow Spirit Juice. You can find the information. Do you have show notes?
We do.
Yeah, okay, great.
Sometimes.
Okay. You can find them in the show notes.
There you go.
And it's called Real Homilies, R-E-E-L. And so it's minute-long homilies for the upcoming Sunday. Definitely relevant or tends towards being received by young people, but it's for anyone.
My kids love it.
And short attention spans, you know, it really helps. Just a minute-long. Just nugget about how awesome Jesus is and how he wants us to be fully alive. But also doing a project with Spirit Juice called Juice Box, where I talk about the faith with little kids, which is amazing. I love it. It's so much fun.
My daughter was featured in one of those videos and she, of course, went to school and told everybody that she was on YouTube. And so now you are watched widely in the Catholic school because everybody got hooked after they watched Rose ask you a question. I think the question was, where do priests go when they die? Which was a little morbid, but you know, it's...
Oh, wow.
It works, you know.
Oh, memento mori.
Yeah, right. You know, you got to train them early. Father Tim, thanks so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Katie, this is wonderful. God bless you and God bless everyone who's listening.
You know, years ago, just to give you a little bit of a throwback perspective about Ave Maria Press and Ave Explorers, we did a special Lenten episode on Holy Week with my dear friend, Father John Burns. And he talked so lovingly and so beautifully about the liturgies of Holy Week, the Holy Thursday, Good Friday, Holy Saturday / Easter Vigil liturgies, and really invited us to contemplate the movements and the moments. And we've done an episode about Holy Week every year since, digging into Lenten themes. A lot of the Lenten books that we publish, these journals, came out of some of these very fruitful conversations that I got to have with Father John Burns and Sister Miriam, and of course, Father Agostino. And now Father Tim Anestos has joined this illustrious crew to help us understand Holy Week. One of the encouragements I think we all need, I'm saying this just as much to myself right now as I'm saying it to you on the other side, listening to the podcast, we can sometimes enter into Holy Week. I've done this before. We can enter into Holy Week and just try to get through it. The same way that we sometimes enter into Lent, and it's just, I just got to put up with these 5 Sundays of Lent, and then boom, I'm at Holy Week, and then it's done, and now we're at Easter. And rather than really sit in the quiet and in the rest of, say, Passion Tide during the fifth week of Lent or the Holy Week entrance into, okay, like I'm actually being intentional in thinking about what is about to occur, we blow through it because we need to get the Easter ham ready and fill the baskets and put the eggs in the trees so that the kids can go hunting and all the different things that can sometimes distract us from the rest that I think is required for Holy Week. And I say rest, not in the sense of let's be lackadaisical and blasé, but resting in the presence of God, which is almost thicker in Holy Week than any other time. There's this concept sometime, and I'll explore it in another episode of something at some point, but there's this concept of the thin veil, these moments in life where the veil between heaven and earth are very, very thin, where you can feel that divine presence more intensely than maybe ever before. I've experienced that thin veil a handful of places in my life, most recently in front of the Tilma of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Mexico City. But these moments where you just enter into the presence of the Lord more easily. You enter into the ethereal divine presence of God without great effort. And I think Holy Thursday night, that moment of procession from leaving the church with Jesus to the altar of repose, and then the hours of prayer and meditation that people are invited to come participate in. You know, for many years of my life, participating in the Holy Thursday liturgies, I did as an altar server when I was a kid, and then later on, I was in the choir. And so the choir would follow behind and sing, "Stay with me, remain here with me, watch and pray," this very chant-driven prayer. And then one by one, the priest and the altar servers and the choir would depart the altar of repose, and people would come in and spend time with Jesus there in essentially the garden. And I have this one very vivid memory where the veil felt incredibly thin as we were walking through the church and processing out to the altar of repose, when I found myself in the back of the choir, because I played the violin, so I was not singing in the choir, but I still walked with the choir. I found myself in the back next to Deacon George Carr, who was one of our deacons at the parish, and Deacon Carr was moving a little slower than the rest of the procession, and so had kind of fallen to the back. And he and I were walking beside one another, and just kind of fell into step with each other. And I realized, you know, he didn't necessarily want to walk alone, so I was just kind of walking beside him. And we were both singing, "Stay with me, remain here with me, watch and pray, watch and pray." And I've just now sung on the podcast, and so it's very evident to you that I cannot sing. And if you think I can't sing, God rest his soul, Deacon George Carr could not sing either. Couldn't carry a tune in a bucket, and knew it, but was singing with such passion and vigor and joy and prayerfulness, because this was an incredibly important thing, that we walk with Jesus to the altar of repose, and we stay with him, we remain with him, we watch and pray. And this very thin veil moment of being with him there, knowing we were taking Jesus to enter into the mystery of what was going to occur on Holy Thursday evening, and then, of course, Good Friday, centuries and centuries ago, that we're reliving this moment together as we walk to this altar of repose. And I've been thinking about that very, very intensely over the past few days, knowing Holy Thursday is coming, knowing we're entering into the mystery of Good Friday. Deacon Carr passed away just a couple of weeks ago. I was actually in Mexico City on pilgrimage during his funeral, and was, of course, praying for him over the course of the morning and for his family. He was a beloved member of our parish community and a beloved member of our diocese, and just an incredible guy. I remember him and his wife dancing at our wedding. They had a great time. And that thin veil has kind of been popping back up into my head as we enter into Holy Week, because that is one of my most vivid Holy Week memories. And I'm telling you that story because, one, I'd like you to pray for Deacon Carr and for his family. But two, because I think as we enter into Holy Week, we go into it with memories of the Holy Weeks we've experienced before, of the Lents we've had before, but it's also an invitation and a chance to experience something new, to not enter into this time of intense prayer and even more intense fasting and sacrifice, to not enter into it with just a bunch of preconceived notions about how it's going to be, but to welcome the Lord's presence in a new way so we can experience it to the full, so we can see what God wants to do. Hopefully that's what we've done this entire Lenten season. We've been so grateful to walk with you here on Ave Explores Lent, digging into Father Agostino's book. Again, link down in the show notes. to Father's Book and to so many other incredible things, use the promo code AEX24 for 25% off your entire order at Ave Maria Press. It's one of the best discounts we give. It's just for you, our wonderful listeners, AEX24. You don't want to miss out on using that code while it's available. For all of our episodes for the rest of the year, that'll be the code. So make sure that you use it anytime you go buy something from AveMariaPress.com. Now, we're obviously ending our Lenten season today. We're going to take a few weeks off, and then we'll be back in early May for a really exciting series. Just to give you a little teaser, a little taste of what we're going to do, we're going to explore Catholicism in the USA, the places, the stories, the people, historically and present day, that have mattered in a really profound way in the story of U.S. Catholicism. And most especially, kind of give you a pilgrimage snapshot, not just of the Eucharistic pilgrimage that's going to be happening across the country in anticipation of our big Eucharistic Congress in Indianapolis this summer, but some of the holy places that maybe this summer on your family road trips, on your family vacations, you can swing by and spend some time at these holy places with men and women who are on the path to sainthood, their causes that are open, these places where there have been apparitions or moments of profound grace. So make sure you're subscribed to our show. Click the little plus sign button in your podcast app so you don't miss a single episode. Go to AveMariaPress.com and sign up so you get the notifications directly to your inbox about when our next season is going to launch. We're so grateful that you have spent this Lent with us. It's always a real joy to get to walk with you through this series. Don't forget to use that code AEX24 for your discount at AveMariaPress.com, and we'll see you very soon. Thanks for being with us. Happy Holy Week.